Welcome back to the Man Catholic Podcast. I'm Steve Priest.
I'm Thomas Wirtz.
I'm Brock Martin.
And I'm Rich McPherson.
Today we're talking about how boys can become men. This time. Ooh. Rich, thanks for joining us today on the Man Catholic Podcast. It's great to have you as a special guest.
Thank you for having me.
Now, one of the topics that came up from you was this Camino in Maryland. We're going to get to that towards the end of the podcast today. But what we really want to talk about is just the formation of boys to men.
Love it, Rich. Your experience in shaping young men over decades, right? I don't want to give your age away, but in starting building high schools for boys and now one for girls, we're going to obviously focus on your experience with boys. But I think what a tremendous opportunity we have to pull wisdom out of your head, right?
Yeah.
A lot of our guys, our listeners, are maybe young fathers or young men themselves. And the idea for me anyways, you guys can speak in, of having teenagers, period, is scary. And having teenage boys and just the opportunity, scary maybe is a little dramatic, but the opportunity to really help usher them into manhood is just exciting. A little scary because I don't want to screw it up.
Right.
And so I'm excited to kind of hear from you, like, what are some gems you've learned over years and years of educating teenage boys in the high school setting?
Well, not only just in a school, I have four sons that have all graduated from college and training them also. What you have to do is treat boys like boys when they're younger. A lot of the co-ed schools, I think, tend to lean towards the female sex when they teach a class or when they work with students. So that's why we have single-sex schools at the Heights, where I was previously, at Avalon, and the girls' school, Brookwood. But it's kind of fun to see boys when they're together.
Yep.
And how they help each other, and how when they read a book together. We had a boy, when we first started Avalon, that just hated anything academics. And one of the books we always read is Henry V, which is a great coming of age
Shakespeare,
when Henry
right?
becomes king. And he just hated school. But then one day, he thought there was no one around, and you could hear him reciting the Crispin Crispian Day speech.
Classic.
As he was going down the hallway. And we said that was a huge success.
I've heard Rich, because I got a sneak peek from your son, that if I'm remembering right, that you can recite that, or no, you recite a poem by Chesterton often. Is that what it is? Lepanto.
Lepanto.
There you go.
Which is the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary. I do also know the Henry V Crispin Crispian Day speech.
There's a famous, Steve and I both played rugby, Rich, and there was a shirt that I found at a tournament, and on the front of it, or somewhere on the shirt, it had a line from that speech that said, "He who sheds his blood with me this day shall be my brother."
Yes.
And I love that line, and I think that speaks a little bit to what you're getting at.
I just had a shirt that said, "Give blood, play rugby."
Similar idea.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that book at all. We just used to throw books at each other when I was an adolescent kid. I don't remember reading many.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. I mean, there's a thing when you get guys together and they have man teachers that they can see something. I mean, at Avalon, for fourth grade, third grade up, it's all male teachers.
Hmm.
And so that's kind of cool that they see men reciting poetry. They
yep.
see men singing. They see men hiking. We do a pilgrimage every year from anywhere from 15 miles to 23 miles every May. And the boys come right along. In fact, we had a great thing last year. We climbed Sugarloaf Mountain, which is in Frederick County. It's very close to us. But we had started at St. Joseph on Carrollton Manor on land given by Charles Carroll, the signer of the Declaration of Independence. And about the 10-mile mark, we climbed a hill called Sugarloaf Mountain. It's more of a hill, but it's about an hour climb. And then we recited a rosary at top. But we have a boy in the school who was in a wheelchair, and he's been in the school for a number of years. And the wheelchair couldn't go up the mountain. And the other classmates carried him up the mountain in his wheelchair.
That's beautiful.
It was amazing. And they were proud of that feat also,
yeah.
which was really kind. And they got, when they finally made it up, we knew they were coming. And everyone just clapped for them, and it was really cool, unselfish. So
I love that story, Rich. I'm curious, you know, if you look at our culture, it is so obvious that there is a crisis of just a lack of authentic masculinity. And I think
yes.
the work that you are doing, helping to form these young boys and helping them become the men that they are called to be, is such a necessary and super important work. Can you just maybe give us a bird's eye view? Like, as you look at the project of helping young boys become men, describe to us and to our listeners what that process is like. What are some of the big things, the big goals that you're trying to accomplish, the big lessons you're trying to teach them? What are some of the things that you want them walking away having learned and having really internalized?
One of the things is love of God. We really want them to be able to pray, and we want them to love God, and seeing that prayer is a masculine thing. It's a manly thing. You know, when we're down on our knees praying, they see us down on our knees. I think that's huge. I mean, the literature we read the Odyssey and, you know, the Aeneid and things like that, which have great examples of manhood and things like that. Let me tell you one thing we do that's really different than any other school. This was given to me by Sam Phillips, who's the admissions guy at Christendom College. But about 10 years ago, he said, you know, my brother used to do this thing down at the Titanic Memorial. Anyway, there's a Titanic Memorial in D.C., which is a Christ figure. It's a big statue, maybe 12 feet high, with the arms out, sort of like Leonardo DiCaprio and the Titanic, except this was before. And the monument was given by women for the men who gave their lives that women and children would live. Mm-hmm. And it was President Taft's wife who led the instruction. Well, we do this thing. We go down. It's a father-son night. We go down at 11:30 at night. I do a 10-minute thing about the Titanic sinking and what led up to women and children first, the motto there. And then we do a rosary for all the men. And then we sing some songs and recite some poetry. And then at about 12:45, these men from the Titanic Society come down in black tie in front of the monument, and they toast different men who gave their lives, including one priest who gave his life. And then they leave, and then we stay till 2:20 in the morning when the ship finally went down. We say some final prayers, then we go home. And when the boys go, the first year they asked me if they, you know, can we have the day off after school? And I told them, nah, come on, these guys gave their lives. All you have to do is go to school tired tomorrow. And they did it. It's like a badge of honor to go to the Titanic that late at night, getting home 3 in the morning, 3:15, and going to school the next day.
Dang. Mm.
Rich, real quick on that, and I know Steve wants to jump in, a lot of guys don't have that experience maybe to be near the Titanic Memorial. Can you just, real quick, why is something like that impactful?
Well, first of all, you know, they might not remember math or literature, so they'll remember going down to the Titanic late at night.
Heck yeah.
I mean, and that's why I think a hike is an important thing. We do a lot of hiking at the school. You do it together. One guy's tired, you egg on the other, and it's just a great event. They remember that stuff more than sort of the academics, although the academics, we really press it. I mean, we want the boys to be good students and stuff like that.
So those formative experiences is really...
Yeah.
Rich, that takes me into my next question is, what you're doing through education, through the schools, crazy intentional. Not a lot of us have the opportunity. I don't have the opportunity to send my son to that kind of school. You're across the country. If we could pivot for a second, and as Thomas said earlier, pull some of your wisdom and apply it to our lives as a father, as a brother, as a dad, how do I match this intentionality in my household or with other men and their kids? So how can we take what you're doing and apply it into our own personal lives?
You know, we have a group here, the fathers, that will take their kids camping. So a bunch of fathers and kids go camping together. They do it for a couple nights. They'll go somewhere or one night. And it's just, I think it's important for the boys to see men together in conversation and being friends and things like that. That's always a good example. So you can always hike or camp somewhere. I think that's a good thing. You know, and the father has to be interested in things. Like my kids all know that I love poetry. I didn't love it until very, you know, after college. I just started liking it. And all my kids recite poetry now. And so they have to see the father doing things like that. Or the father, you know, there's an exhibit at the local art museum. The father has to kind of want to go down there and do it. It's not just a female thing. So they have to see their father is interested in lots of things. Sports, even going to a baseball game together or a football game together. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I think it has to be just father-son, not mom. It means it's nice when mom is there. You got plenty of time for that. But there's something about the father-son that, to me, I've seen it year after year making a difference in kids.
So a little bit about Rich real quick. What I know about you, Rich, is you went to Harvard, and I believe you studied mathematics. Is that correct? correct?
Yeah, applied mathematics.
And you have one of the best scores, I think, still in Harvard history. Studied with some famous people while you were at Harvard. I'll let you divulge that if you want. But I've also heard from a mutual friend that to this day, you have every student's name memorized that you've ever taught. And whether or not that's true, it's at least the perception, Rich, that you have that. And I say that because you're an impressive man that has done impressive things. And for our audience to understand that you're not just some random headmaster, you actually are a man that has done amazing things, has an amazing mind. And I do want to dig in again on the some of the comments you said. I think are amazingly insightful. You know, the importance of the father's witness and the father's son activities with mom not there. Again, I'm going to the why. Why do you think that is so important for the formation of young men?
You just need examples. And, you know, I remember my brother Joe, who was actually the headmaster of Brookwood before me, says, you know, it's very, and I kind of agree with him. I mean, I do agree with him that kids have to see that their parents have friends and their parents get along with other people and their parents go, like, you know, even my dad, I think he went to every wake and funeral of every person has ever known. I think my brother Joe and I like that. You know, if someone dies, we go to the funeral. And the kids notice that. I mean, that's a work of mercy, right? Mm-hmm. Feeding, we do soup kitchens, feeding the hungry. I just think the example of a father for his son is very important. Or sometimes even if the boy's not getting along with the father, there's another dad there who might be able to say something. Sometimes an uncle or a friend or a neighbor might be a better influence for certain boys than their own dad. I don't know. Sometimes you have to form like a triangle and go outside the immediate father-son thing like that. I don't know.
I love that, Rich. I love that. Quick question. A couple months ago, we did an interview with Father Mike Schmitz, and he said that you know, his advice to young men, if he could give them any advice, was just simply reject passivity and embrace responsibility. And ever since we had that interview, that idea of rejecting passivity and embracing responsibility has really, it's just kind of reverberated as I think through, you know, what I'm trying to do as a father. I'm curious, what are some ways as you are forming these young men that idea of giving them responsibility, because young boys, they're not necessarily always going to be able to accomplish everything that you want them to right away. So how do you kind of balance that, letting them fail while also really trying to push them and encourage them to take on more responsibility?
Yeah, you got to let them fail sometimes. You got to do that. You know, we have work days at school where the boys have to, you know, take pride in their campus, and they have to pick up trash, they have to transplant trees, they have to clean up the playground. So there's a lot of work. We give them that a lot of time. The school, Avalon, has moved a number of times, and every time we move, we get basically the whole school helping us move, and they take more pride in the school too when they do things like that. We have them paint sometimes, and so those responsibilities, you know, I think sports are a good way to overcome. You know, I do love sports. I played freshman basketball at Harvard. I tell my students I averaged 22 a game. I don't tell them it was 22 seconds. They're impressed with the 22. But sports helps so much with giving of yourself and camaraderie and, you know, being the savviness of sports thinking and stuff like that. So we, you know, it's amazing how many boys at our school play sports. So, by the way, I have a Boston accent. I don't know if you've noticed that.
we were all kind of guessing.
We did,
yeah.
We did, yeah.
I was just in Boston recently.
That thing about memorizing names, I do work at that. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the year, we take pictures of all the kids, and I sit down and memorize. I used to have my kids test me. And then, well, you know, once you get a name, you're pretty good at it. You always try to get their name. So
okay,
it takes some work.
Rich, it's still super impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
You can memorize.
You're wicked smart, Rich.
Wicked smart.
So I've got a question. A lot of adult men are still boys. They have not grown up all the way, especially in our culture and even in the church. Rich, would you say that we can apply some of these same tactics, intentionality in evangelization as brother to brother, as you're talking about adult to boy or adult to child? Would you suggest these are all great things that we could do if we're trying to reach out to other guys?
Yeah, I think it's good. You know, the camping, because we have one this weekend coming up, camping trip. The fathers organized it. It wasn't the schools.
Mm-hmm.
the father's order, and this one of my sons who graduated from Avalon, Matt, is going on that. But yeah, to get the other guy out of the house and get him camping, some guys just have never done that stuff.
Yeah,
but it's good for them.
Yeah,
there's a men's group out here among the fathers that, once again, it's not associated with the school, but a lot of the school people go to it, and you know people at our school invite other fathers to this, and there's a different talk each month on something, some virtue. Now, talks aren't the only way.
Well, I recently took on, for those avid listeners, I took Brock and Thomas up camping recently because I'm trying to help them become men as well. So
it was in a beautiful RV.
It was in a plush RV. And
hey, Rich, it sounds like part of the why is, or part of the process is having a high expectation of young men and calling them to that. And it makes me think of a quote, former Navy SEAL Jocko Willick, who's written different books, has a podcast, one of my favorite books, Extreme Ownership, he wrote with another Navy SEAL. And he has this little quick video where he's driving in the car and he says, you know, today's culture, nobody tells them what to do as they become teenagers. And so they kind of flounder. And he's like, look, I'll tell you what to do. When you're 13, you're 15, you're 17, go lift weights, go work out, go get strong, go learn how to wrestle, go do jujitsu, basically be active. He's like, go read a good book, shape your mind. Don't sit around and play video games all day. Don't do drugs. Don't drink. What would you say if you were in a conversation with Jocko in response to that? Would you agree? What's your take on that?
Oh, yeah. I would agree. Try to keep them busy. Off the video games. The video games are really insidious, really, really weak. We have a rule at our school that no phones can be seen during the school day. I mean, so if you're going to use a phone, it has to be outside the school because it really is addictive for the kids. Totally. Keep them busy. Yeah, that's always what you want to do.
Yeah, I think that speaks into just the masculine, the testosterone that we're made to guard, protect, to be stronger just for a purpose. And so getting our body in line with kind of the spirit of who we are, body, soul, as men, I think that it resonated with me, and I'm look forward to keeping my boys active. But
I was going to ask, so, you know, we spent a lot of time in this conversation talking about helping young boys to become men. But a lot of our listeners are, as Thomas mentioned, young fathers, and many of them, like me, are raising young girls. And it sounds like you have had obviously a lot of experience, whether at the Heights or at Avalon, but also now as a headmaster of an all-girls school. And I'm just curious, I really think that one of the most masculine things that young dads can do is to raise daughters to be virtuous, to be saintly as well. And so I'm just curious if you could speak into the difference. What's different about raising young girls to become women than raising young boys to become men? What are some of the key differences there?
Yeah, they're definitely, I know just teaching, they're different. I mean, girls tend to listen, you know, they're very afraid of raising their hand and making a mistake. Boys can't wait to make a mistake. Right. I mean, they get their hand up so fast and answer it incorrectly, and it just kind of slides off them. Girls, if they make a mistake, it's like, oh, they're mortified, you know? Yeah, they don't have the energy that the boys have, that's for sure. I think another thing is just good literature, and I think the literature should be a little different for the girls and the boys. And so both my daughters are voracious readers. So they'll read everything. My daughter Maggie, who graduated from Brookwood, my wife was saying she wanted to read a good Russian novel. Asked Maggie if Crime and Punishment. So Maggie's just in college now, but she read this in high school. It's Crime and Punishment. Do you think I should read that? Yeah, that'd be a good book, Mom. But, you know, Anna Karenina, I think you're really like that. You know, just that I can, you know, and that's the one she read. But just that I have a high school daughter who's read those two books.
Right.
By the time she's, but now we have a teacher who can get them through. Sometimes the student isn't ready for a book like that.
Yeah.
But just the literature they read. Both my girls played sports. They each played three sports a season. My daughter played field hockey, basketball, and lacrosse. And the other one did cross-country basketball and track.
Yeah, there you go.
So sports are good. And, you know, just the other thing is that camaraderie of being with other girls is important, just like it is for boys.
Yeah.
Tough to get it right, though.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, parenting in general, right? I think we said we're a little nervous earlier. I'm a lot nervous. My son is 13, and it's on my mind daily. How am I making sure that I am doing what I need to do to be intentional to make sure he becomes a man by the time he leaves my house? Rich, we're about out of the time here. What I want to do is I want to go back to this Camino of Maryland that you're a part of. And as I mentioned, I've done part of the Camino Santiago three different times, a couple hundred miles each time. And this is a 14-day, 230-mile trek through the landscapes of Maryland. And it starts at Point Lookout in Maryland to the Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg, Maryland. I mean, this sounds incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about how this came about? And again, the whole theme that we're talking about, being active, getting out on hikes, dads and sons. I mean, this is right into what we're talking about today, and a great opportunity for any listeners to look up Camino-MD.org to learn more. But Rich, walk us through what this is all about.
We hold pilgrimages every year at our school, and they say they can go up to 23 miles, and we have families, we have fathers, daughters, mothers, friends do these pilgrimages in public. It's a public witness. But I 6 years ago, I did part of the Camino with my wife, and I was kind of disappointed some of the churches were closed. I mean, that's what I wanted, to really pray hard. But anyway, I said, you know, but I loved it. I did love that. I loved going to Santiago de Compostela. That was my highlight. But I said, we need something like this in the United States. And my brother Joe was a Maryland historian. He wrote a little pamphlet called The Ark and the Dove, and he wrote a short epic where he wrote the history of the Maryland in 46 sonnets, sonnet form. He was really into poetry, too. But he used to always take a lot of us down to southern Maryland to the historic churches. And I said, wouldn't it be cool if we walked from Point Lookout, which is the southern tip, it's where the Chesapeake and the Potomac meet, all the way up to Emmitsburg, where Mother Seton is a patron saint of Catholic schools, patron saint of Maryland. She lived in Maryland. She's the first American canonized saint. I mean, and it's across the state. It's almost like the Camino, which is across the country.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map right here. Yeah,
France to almost the edge, and this is only... Emmitsburg's only 2 miles from Pennsylvania.
Yep.
So I actually have a Finis Tede where we can go another 2 miles to a bar after we cross.
Yes, totally worth it. If you're going to walk 230, you might as well walk two more to get to this bar into Pennsylvania here. And Gettysburg is not far north of that, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's just keep going.
One priest wants me to go from Pennsylvania down. He wants us to get all like the 9 Caminos they have. In Spain.
Wow. Well, this seems like an absolutely incredible experience. Go ahead. You were going to say something else.
One of the stops with the very first Mass in Maryland is St. Clement's Island, and that's going to be our stop on June 13th. We're going to just walk a little bit, take boats to St. Clement's Island, then have Mass, get back, and then do another 10 miles of walking that day.
The Camino Maryland starts June 10th at 11 a.m. from Point Lookout. It looks to end on the 23rd of June. This is 2024, and registration opens this January 3rd. And again, you can visit Camino-MD.org to learn more about it. Everything you want to know is there. An information form is there. You can fill that out and get even more answers.
I love it, Rich, because what you talked about, the history of Catholicism in the United States, is very concentrated where you're going to be walking. And I just the activity piece, the tradition of pilgrimage is so important. We have the Mother Cabrini Shrine here in the west side of Denver. And I would get a couple buddies when I was here in grad school, and we'd walk the 6 hours from Denver up the mountain to the shrine. And just because that's like what we do. It's a great time of prayer, penance. But just especially for the young men, I think, what an opportunity to get their band of brothers to go down. And you can start anywhere, right? You can do 2 days, all the days. You can kind of do whatever.
I have the Southern Camino, the Northern Camino across D.C. And that's what I want. What I'd like is to go to each parish, since it's the Eucharistic revival also.
Heck yeah.
I'd like them to have the Eucharist exposed. Mm. And then we go to a church. We get to meet these parishioners. I tell them it's like their once a year day from the pajama game, the movie, the musical Pajama Game. It's our once a year day, you know, where they can show off their church to us. They can pray with us. I hope some of them will walk the next leg with us.
That's awesome.
Some already are going to feed us. They already told us they'll feed us as pilgrims. So.
Well, Rich, if I would not be walking the Camino Santiago this exact same time, I would certainly try and fly my family out for this from Colorado. But we will be in spirit walking the Camino in Spain these exact same dates. Rich, go ahead. You have one more thing?
One of the priest secretary said, this isn't crazy at all. You save $1,500 not flying this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's hard. I mean, this is a long journey, but it is life-changing, that's for sure. So check it out. Rich, thank you so much for being here with us. Thank you for your incredible wisdom, your wicked smart, and bringing it to the Man Catholic Podcast. That's it for today, guys. We'll catch you next time.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless.